Hello, fellow travelers, and welcome to Adventures in Security, episode 16 for March 5th, 2006. This is a weekly podcast published each Sunday evening sometime before midnight. You can find the information covered in our episodes at adventuresinsecurity.com/blog. If you're interested in commenting on what you hear or about topics you'd like us to talk about, please send email to podcasts@adventuresinsecurity.com. Well, hello everyone. I'm flying solo today. The first Sunday of each month is family day at the Olzak house, and I had asked Chris and Larry if they wanted to take the day off, and they immediately said yes. So we're going to just cover a couple quick topics today. The first one is going to be a commentary on political risks associated with personal information storage. And the second one is going to be a look at IP surveillance. And before we get started, I just wanted to ask everyone to comment on the new format for the podcasts. You know, we tried to mix it up a little bit. I tried to bring some additional people on board so that we could make this more of a conversation than me just talking at you. So I'd like you to visit our blog site. Again, that's adventuresinsecurity.com/blog. And there's a blog entry out there where you can post your comments, or you can send me an email at tom.olzak, that's O-L-Z-A-K, at Erudio, E-R-U-D-I-O, security.com. And let us know what you think. We have a lot of listeners who've been with us for a while. And just let us know whether how you like the new format, whether there's some things that you'd like us to see differently. Really, this podcast is for the listeners, and we want to make sure that we are delivering to you the kinds of things that you need to manage security better. Okay, having said that, let's move on to the first topic, which is political risks associated with personal information storage. So hang on a second. Let me get up on my soapbox. All right, there we are. Well, when we think of risks related to malicious hacking, we usually list financial ramifications. But as global information delivery changes, the risks are increasing in severity. This week, Google moved its search records from its Chinese site to the United States. The reason stated for the move was the possibility that the Chinese government might access those records without Google's consent. This was a responsible move by Google, given the potential reprisals against individuals whose searches cause concern within political circles in Beijing. But is the data safe in the U.S.? I wrote in a January 26, 2006 blog article about a successful attempt to acquire U.S. military secrets by alleged representatives of the Chinese government. A foiled attack against the British government prompted me to write the article. What prevents these same attackers from breaking into databases in other countries to search for evidence of dissident activity in China? You know, I don't know what the solution is, but I do know that maintaining information that can be used to reconstruct an individual's internet habits is becoming a bigger problem than the privacy issues touted by many Americans. It's important for internet companies to understand that the emergence of a truly global internet requires vigilance that many organizations operating within democracies may find difficult to comprehend. Business intelligence isn't a good enough reason to store search information or other personal data that might be compromised by a foreign government for political purposes. All right, so that's my opinion about that, and let me jump down off the soapbox. Ouch, that hurt. All right, next topic is IP surveillance. When managers discuss physical security, it's usually restricted to what types of locks to place on what doors. This is a good start, but locks are only one component of effective physical security. In fact, a lock is intended as one of many safeguards to delay an intruder until he's identified and intercepted by security guards or police officers. Good physical security requires the combination of locks, barriers, and sensors. But these safeguards must be supported by the capability for human assessment of alerts or alarms. The quickest method for gaining visibility into sensitive areas is the use of cameras. Until recently, closed-circuit television, or CCTV, technology was the principal means of viewing physical assets. Today, IP surveillance systems are taking over and providing significant improvements. In this episode, I define IP surveillance, explore how it works, and list the potential value it brings to your security efforts. IP surveillance is the use of an IP network to gather or view information collected by network-ready surveillance cameras. An example of an IP surveillance configuration can be found at our blog site in the episode notes. Three internet switches in that configuration are connected to the core network infrastructure. Cameras are either directly attached via Cat5 Ethernet cabling or via a wireless connection. The use of 100 megabit per second or greater connections is recommended for high-resolution images. Security personnel can access camera output in one of two ways. The first method is by direct connection to one or more cameras. This is typically facilitated by using web services embedded in the camera. Real-time visibility into coverage areas and camera adjustment for better viewing are possible using vendor-supplied or third-party software. Password protection prevents eavesdropping. The second method involves accessing camera output stored on disk. Cameras can send information to a recording station for storage in one of many popular video formats. These recordings are quickly available for investigation, audit, or other business purposes. Okay, so this is cool technology, but how can it help strengthen your security program? Well, barriers like fences, gates, and locked doors and windows are only a temporary frustration for a determined intruder. Again, barriers are intended to delay an intruder's advance, not stop it. The delay provided by an organization's physical barriers should be long enough for human intervention. Cameras provide the means for local or remote monitoring personnel to quickly identify an intruder and direct law enforcement or on-site security guards to the appropriate location in order to apprehend and remove the threat. Even organizations that use motion or vibration sensors gain significant benefit from cameras. Sensors are not 100% accurate. False positives and false negatives are possible. Strategically placed cameras can help ensure costly human security resources don't continuously run after false alarms, and that intruders are unable to circumvent non-visual safeguards. Finally, cameras can provide continuous surveillance of sensitive areas. Installation of IP surveillance cameras is pretty easy. If used with power over Ethernet-capable switches, cameras can be placed in locations where no electrical outlets exist. Power is delivered over the Ethernet cable. CCTV systems used coax cables to transmit unencrypted information. Once an intruder gained physical access to the cable, it was pretty easy to tap into the data stream without being detected. Security personnel can protect IP camera output by using LAN encryption technology. Cameras might not be necessary for every business, but if you are protecting critical intellectual property or other sensitive information, consider at least limited use of video technology, even if it's just around your data center. Cost shouldn't be an issue, with cameras ranging from less than $200 to under $1,000, depending on the feature set you need. Okay, that's it for this week. Next week, it'll be Chris and Larry and myself back again. And again, please be sure to send us your comments about what you think about the podcast and how you think we might be able to improve it. So until next time, be careful what you click.